Welcome to the UK Investor Magazine podcast, the latest on shares, markets and investments, now available on your Amazon Alexa.
Hello and welcome to the UK Investor Magazine podcast, now also available on the UK Investor Magazine mobile app. For today's podcast, we'll be taking a deep dive into the Vietnam Holding Investment Trust. We're going to be looking at the wider Vietnam economy and the factors that are driving returns in the investment trust. And to do that, we're very kindly joined once more by Craig Martin, who is the chairman of Dynam Capital, the manager of Vietnam Holding. Craig, very much welcoming you back to the podcast.
It's great to speak with you again, Jonathan.
Thank you very much. It is going to be quite an economically weighted podcast today because there have been some big moves happening in the underlying data in Vietnam, and that's something we really want to get stuck into. But before we get into it, Craig, please would you be able to give people listening to this that maybe aren't aware of Vietnam Holding an introduction, first of all, to yourself as well as the investment trust, please?
Certainly, Jonathan. So myself and my colleagues are from Dynam Capital, and we're the fund manager for Vietnam Holding. Vietnam Holding is listed on the main board of the London Stock Exchange. It's part of the FTSE All-Share, and it's focused exclusively on investing in the exciting market of Vietnam.
Indeed, and that's something that we're going to be discussing in some detail today. And as I said, it's going to be looking pretty much at the economics in this podcast. And I think it would be pertinent, Craig, if we started with what's quite a broad question and probably one of the most exciting elements of the Vietnam economy at the moment. And it's the realignment of one of the biggest neighbours to the north of Vietnam, of course, China. Mm. There's big changes happening there in their economy. How are Vietnam benefiting from that at the moment?
Well, it's very interesting, isn't it? I think Vietnam is very much seen as a friendly shore, a friendly place to do business, to manufacture in what can be these difficult geopolitical times. Obviously, there's only so much that a country such as the US or Europe can reshore or nearshore, so it needs friendly shores. And over several years now, Vietnam's kind of emerged as that friendly shore. And as countries further perhaps isolate China from a trade perspective and put pressure on China, we've seen that recently, haven't we, in the form of tariffs, etc., there is further evidence of this shift in manufacturing from China to Vietnam. It is known as China plus one. And indeed, if we look a little bit in detail in the second quarter in Vietnam, imports from China into Vietnam rose by close to 35%. And exports from Vietnam to the United States rose by 22%. So you can get a sense that perhaps there's some market share shifts and maybe manufacturers that were doing everything in China are doing more in Vietnam. And we've also seen a little bit of evidence of this in Vietnam's kind of factory productivity. And the PMI index has recently risen to just under 55, I think 54.7, which is a recent high. So that's an evidence that the factories are buzzing. There's been an increase in the import of perhaps raw materials and semi-finished goods from China. And there's been great growth actually in exports very broadly. And much of Vietnam's competitive advantage in exports is in the assembly and production of electronic goods, including mobile phones and technical components. So over time, we're seeing that the kind of development of these high-tech clusters in Vietnam, and with contract manufacturers typically who have been very active in North Asia, including China for many years, people like Foxconn, and they're investing more into Vietnam. So it's not just kind of swapping the made in whichever country name badges. This is genuine expansion of economic activity, genuine investment in factories, and then Vietnam taking more of the lion's share or more of the market share, I'd say, from China. So the countries are worried about China because it's the second largest economy in the world. In some measures, it's the largest. So Vietnam can benefit, as other parts of Asia can benefit, from people looking to diversify away from China.
Thank you. And just picking up on the point you made there about the PMIs, reading the report that came out earlier on this week, I saw new orders, I think, rose to record highs. So that's really building momentum there. And staying on some of the data that you mentioned there and looking at the exports and imports, I was reading in V&H's most recent fact sheet, exports up 15%, I believe, year on year, imports up 18%. So there's a huge boost in international trade there, Craig. What's Dynan Capital doing on the ground and of course within the portfolio to take advantage of this big jump in trade that we see?
Well, look, and exactly as you say, Vietnam's really kind of emerged on the global stage in the last 20 years as a significant manufacturing center. We're seeing Made in Vietnam, aren't we, appear on many, many goods. And actually, Vietnam has a broad group of trading partners. It's made strong efforts to develop its position in the world. It's got something like 16 free trade agreements in place. And it enjoys a broad range of exports in terms of components, such as, you know, computers and electronics and mobile phones. They make up about a third of its exports. So part of its exports are in the high-tech sector, but it's a broad range. It goes from these high-tech goods to more low-tech goods, a significant manufacturer of garments, of footwear, of, you know, Nike and Adidas kind of running shoes, as well as soft commodities, including coffee and rubber. Vietnam, I think, recently has been exporting coffee to South America, which sounds a bit odd, doesn't it? So there's a broad range of export categories and also a broad range of export destinations. Vietnam's got a very diversified trading deck. So for Vietnam Holding, rather than, say, try and choose one kind of sector or one kind of company that's an exporter, we look to play what we call this Made in Vietnam, this industrial theme, through business-to-business services, because business-to-business services typically can have higher returns on equity, a higher quality of earnings, a more diversified revenue base. So we're a big investor and believer in the logistics sector, in industrial parks, as well as financial services. These are some of the linkages for that Made in Vietnam story. So as a result, we've got a conviction in Gemadep, which is a leading port operator in Vietnam. We've got an investment in Idico, which is a leading industrial park developer, where, you know, a manufacturer from overseas might invest hundreds of millions of dollars in Vietnam and wants to be in a great location for its attracting labor, for its services with good water, access to renewable energy, etc. So industrial parks are a good theme for us. And as well as we're invested in a number of leading banks. Banks provide the kind of financial glue that underpins this industrial theme. So that's the ways that the investment company is benefiting and the way we've positioned the portfolio to benefit from this growing trade and growing trend of industrialization, supporting this Made in Vietnam story.
So a note there, Craig, you mentioned industrialization, a big theme for Vietnam Holding, as is urbanization. But I read that there's a boom underway in tourism in Vietnam at the moment. Now, of course, it's something that's probably not new, but I believe it's picking up momentum and more people are traveling to Vietnam. Is that something you see as an investment theme finding its way into the portfolio? Or do you see that the tourism revenue coming in, does that feed into your existing themes that you have within the portfolio?
Look, it's a great question. And it's certainly really encouraging to see the kind of rebound again in tourism. It was obviously quiet during pandemic and took time to recover. And it has been tremendously high level of growth. If you look back, you know, maybe 20 years ago, number of tourists coming to Vietnam, inbound tourists, is probably somewhere between 2 and 3 million. And now it's probably closer to kind of 18 to 19 million people. Some of this does find its way into our existing holdings. It finds its way into growth in the retail sector, for example. And we've got exposure to the retail sector in Vietnam through a number of names, including Mobile World, which is a key player in modern trade in grocery. But we've got some other modern trade players as well. It also obviously does flow through into the service sector, into banks, and many other sectors that are in the portfolio. We are looking at some specific sectors as well. There are some airline services and airport opportunities. We're invested in an air cargo business, but we're underweight the kind of traditional airline services and airports at the moment. But we're keeping that under review as well. So I think it's a good sign generally. It's also a great way for the, you know, the country to earn foreign exchange and to see tourists coming through its hotels. And it's good for the economic growth as a whole. But we're probably still a little bit underweight the tourism sector at the moment in Vietnam.
Thank you. Very, very interesting. So we're going to move on now, Craig, if we may, and look at the portfolio and the performance so far this year. And without outlining any stats, I do note that the NAV performance of the investment trust has significantly outstripped the benchmark so far this year. So it'd be great if you could provide a little bit more detail in terms of the drivers behind that. What's driving the NAV? What have you done slightly differently compared to the benchmark to enable this? Actually, it's quite a big disparity between the gains that the Vietnam Holdings seeing in the NAV and actually the benchmark that you track.
Yeah, well, look, you're right. We've generated a lot of alpha this year, but also actually over, you know, 1, 3, 5, and even 10 years. It comes down to fairly simple things. It really comes down to stock selection and portfolio construction. And both of those benefit from Vietnam Holding being nimble, a nimble investment company by its size and how we as investment manager construct the portfolio and, you know, make decisions well and effectively. The market as a whole has probably a consensus of about 15% earnings per share growth for this year, for 2024, and we're targeting about 20%. And indeed, some of our holdings that we've chosen will deliver 40 to 50%. So we don't have to be the market. We're in a concentrated portfolio of about 24, 25 companies. So we've got to have high conviction. And so we're an active investor. We're not the index. We've got an active share of something like 70%. So that's really, that nimbleness has been driving the outperformance by us having a very convicted view on some of our core holdings, and they've been delivering this year. So we're delighted with the portfolio performance.
Thank you. So just a question, and probably just to add some context for listeners. You mentioned obviously quite a concentrated portfolio of high conviction holdings, around 24, 25 at the moment. How's that evolved over time, Craig? Has it always been around that level? Have you been a little bit more concentrated in the past? Have you been a little bit more diverse? How's that performed?
Well, we've always been conviction driven. If you step back a little bit and look at the entire market opportunity, there's more than 1,600 public companies to choose from in Vietnam. Now, that gets filtered down fairly quickly, and we provide a very kind of strict framework of selecting good companies and those that kind of conform to our filters around ESG as well as other measures to select our portfolio. I'd say over the last 5 years, we've been somewhere between 24 and maybe 29 holdings. So we've constantly sought to be fairly concentrated. And that gives us, you know, a quality problem that to put something into the portfolio, we've got to sell something. So it's a good discipline in many ways to have, but does mean that, you know, we've got a portfolio where our top 10 holdings probably account for maybe 64% of the portfolio. So we've got to have strong conviction. That's why you need a team on the ground. You've got to be really engaged with each of these portfolio companies and ready to, you know, panic early if they start to do something wrong, or to increase your conviction as they start to, you know, really deliver and find another kind of growth driver or catalyst in their business models.
Thank you. So one thing I know, Craig, just looking at the very recent fact sheets, monthly fact sheets, the amount of cash within the portfolio has increased. Now, when I say increased, it's a very small amount. I think it's gone from 1% to 2%. So, you know, not a huge amount of cash there, but there has been an increase. So it'd be good to get your thoughts and a bit of thinking behind that in terms of, are you looking at putting that to work? Are you in a phase of increasing cash at the moment? You know, maybe there's some market conditions out there that you want to to ride out. It'd be good to get your thinking behind that, and why, you know, there is a little bit more cash than there was a few months ago, and what the plans are going forward.
Well, look, cash is kind of an increases or decreases are probably more of a temporary nature. We have certainly been taking some profit, and some of our names have really been powering ahead sharply this year. And we look to allocate that, you know, towards some of our other opportunities, either adding to our existing names in the portfolio. We do have probably another 24 names next to our kind of portfolio list that we know really, really well. But it's a game of, you know, selling one to bring one in. So typically we keep around 2%, maybe 3% of the portfolio in cash. So it's a temporary perspective as we, you know, maybe take some profit and look to build up one of our other portfolio names cautiously, you know, and at the right time around that. Yeah.
Thank you. So I also note very recently Dye & Capital Managers were rated AAA by Citywire, which is quite an accolade. It would be good if you could share with listeners, you know, what this means for the trust going forward, and what you feel it was within Dye & Capital that you were doing that earned you this rating from Citywire.
Well, look, I think it's credit to the 5 years or so of strong outperformance that Citywire have been tracking, and particularly a strong rise in the share price of Vietnam Holding. Over these 5 years, the NAV, the net asset value, has risen, I think, by almost 90%, whereas the index, which you referred to earlier, has delivered a gain of maybe around 40% cumulatively. So that's significant alpha. That's 500, 600 basis points of annualized alpha. And so the team, you know, we're delighted with this accreditation, as well as the awards we picked up at the end of last year for being the best performing emerging market fund. So it's very nice to be recognized for delivering this strong outperformance against the market, as well as against our peers, and also indirectly for our efforts in bringing the discount to net asset value well in below 5%, which is the lowest of our peers. So, you know, the board of the trust are very focused on discount management, and the combination of the outperforming net asset value and the narrowing of the discount to net asset value have meant the share price has been a very strong performer, and that's partly why we've been winning these awards. So it's nice. We're very pleased to have that recognition. Not only do we get recognized for our financial performance, but also we've scored very highly over many years now in the principles of responsible investing. We get high top marks for that. And that also shows that we don't sacrifice investment returns for being a strong, responsible investor in Vietnam as well.
Yes, and I would also note that UK Investor Magazine readers did vote Vietnam Holding as the best single country investment trust in our 2023 awards. And also, you were talking there about the performance of the share price. Craig, just looking here at the chart, trading at 398 is just 1 pence off of all-time highs, I believe, at this point in time. So a pretty good time to be recording this this podcast for Vietnam Holding. And just a note to listeners, if you would like to check out further information and get the latest fact sheet, do check out the Investment Trust Centre on the UK Investor Magazine. There'll be latest fact sheets in there, some recent coverage as well of Vietnam Holdings. So do check that out. And we'll also put a note in this podcast for people to click through to. So Craig, thank you very much for being on the podcast today.
It's been an absolute pleasure as always, Jonathan. Thank you very much for your time.
And very much looking forward to having you back in the not too distant future, Craig.
Great.
And thank you to everyone for listening. Thank you.
We hope you enjoyed listening to the UK Investor Magazine podcast. Please do share the podcast, and we really value any reviews and comments you leave us in your chosen podcast player. The views presented by the hosts and guests of the UK Investor Magazine podcast are in no way investment advice, and please remember, all investment involves risk.